Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Yes, sir. Well, people, welcome right back. Sam, once again, is doing his miraculous work. We've had a little bit of difficulty getting our guest organized tonight, which is just the way it is in live radio. But you know what? Even if not one person showed up, we had Matt the Mold on hand, and so there was nothing to fear. But anyway, I'm really, really excited, people, tonight. You know who we got coming on? We announced it earlier, and bear with me, my voice is wearing down a little bit. I've been on the friggin' phone all day long. That's unusual for me. We have Dave Gaharry, one of our dear friends. I'm crazy about Dave. He has Money Tree Press, and he's published a new edition of Tom Goodrich's book, Hellstorm. You know, people, if you're familiar with Hellstorm, you should be if you're a Blood River Radio guy, because we've had that book, and we've had these guests on. Several times before, we've had Paul English. So we got not only Dave Gaharry, but we have Paul English coming on. Paul English, if I understand it right, he's the guy who narrates the book. And they have the audio book, and they have, and Dave's almost here. Okay. Well, we got plenty of, we're going to swing this dude. As long as we got Sam on the line, we can do anything. They're also putting out a DVD, and I can't wait to get that. Maybe I can talk them into sending it to the old Blood River Radio. So once again, in summary, the book Hellstorm, the new edition, they have the DVD, they have the audio, and they have the audio book. So you can get all those in one place, and we'll tell you, we'll get Dave to tell you how to do that. Tom, the guy who published the books, not on tonight, he has this voice thing. His voice wears down a good little bit. And so we're not going to have Tom on. So we're going to have Dave on, we're going to have Mr. English calling in from the UK. So I guess since Dave published the book, we're going to start off with my good buddy Dave. Me and Dave covered Erasing the Liberty for about two segments one time. That was one of our most popular segments. But anyway, how you doing tonight, Dave?
I'm good, Eddie. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, man, I'm glad we got you hooked up, man. Hey, I'm about as low tech. All I do, Sam, when Sam tells me something, I just tell it and do it. I have no clue what he was talking about. MP3 file, that you might as well be speaking iambic pentameter to me. Pentameter. Anyway, so we're going to be covering, tell us a little bit about this book, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Dave, you and Mr. English, and because it's going to be pretty, I'm just going to act as the MC, bringing y'all in and out of the breaks, but I've really been looking forward to this, and I know our audience is really looking forward to it, because when we covered Hellstorm before, man, we got the rave reviews. So go ahead, Dave. Give the audience, tell us which way we're going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've known Tom for over a decade. And, of course, I read the book Hellstorm. And I'm sorry about that. And what happened was that someone had, well, you know, Jacob. Jacob had suggested that I reach out to Tom because the book wasn't really selling well. And I said, sure, okay, I will. And I did. And Tom and I spoke. First we texted on Skype, and then we spoke on Skype or, you know, via Skype, and we decided to move ahead with it. And it turned out that it was, something that we could get done pretty quickly. I copy edited the book, and we've got Arthur Kemp, who wrote the foreword for it. So it's the second edition of Hellstorm. And at the same time, Tom mentioned Paul's rendition of it via the audiobook, and we incorporated that into the product on the website. And on top of that, the movie that was done by Kyle Hunt, an adaptation of the book, 90-minute DVD movie video, we also have that there. So we have the book itself, the second edition, the audio book, 14-hour audio file, which can be obviously delivered all over the world via internet and email, and the DVD by Kyle Hunt. So we're very excited about it. People have been getting it from all over the world. We always have about, I think, 25% of our patrons are from outside the United States, most of the UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, but we do hit other countries as well. So we're very excited about it, and I'm just happy that Tom and I and Paul and Kyle got together and are able to offer this, because I don't think anything like this has ever been done in our arena.
Well, you know, I would like to thank you so much. I can't believe I get guests of your caliber and Paul's caliber and Tom's caliber, but it's a great honor to have y'all on. And by the way, I understand Sam was telling me that you sent him two clips. Which one would you like to play the clip, Dave? When would you like to have Sam play it? Which one? You want the 46-second one, or do you want the other one played first?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Eddie. Well, when I get him over to him, I'm just getting the second clip.
He's got him now, I think. It's my understanding. Sam's got him now. We don't call him the wizard for nothing, dude. He makes commercials while we're on the friggin' air. I've seen him do it. Anyway, so the only thing you need to do is let us know which clip you want to go, fella, and it'll be done. Sam the Wizard, never underestimate that dude.
Yes, I'm going to actually send him over right now, as long as my
he's got him. He already has them, Dave. Sam already has them ready to play.
Oh, he does. Okay, so I thought that he wanted me to get him the actual clip.
So he's ready. He's ready to go. Hey, Sam, go ahead and play the 44-second one, guy.
Millions murdered, millions raped, millions tortured, millions enslaved, millions of men, women, and children cast to the wind. No matter what you have read about the Second World War, no matter what you may have been told about it, no matter what you believe happened during the so-called Good War, forget it. Now, for the first time in over 70 years, learn what the war and so-called peace looked like to those who lost. Learn what was done to Germany and her people in the name of freedom, democracy, and liberation. In their own words, in graphic detail, this is their story. Hellstorm, the death of Nazi Germany, 1944-1947.
That was an amazing clip. Hey, what do you think about that, Dave? You know what? The words would be out of your mouth, and Sam can, I don't know how he does it. He will not tell me, because I've been trying to spy on him, learn his secrets, but he will, you know what? He takes those secrets to the grave, dude. I'm telling you.
Well,
hey, hold on. We're going to play that. We're going to play the next shorter clip too. Go ahead, Sam. Thank you so much, Sam, for doing that. We're going to play another clip, people. Hang on.
1944.
Yeah, before
the village of Nemersdorf lay mantled in sleep. Dark and still, only the twinkling of street lamps suggested life in the tiny town. It was now the sixth autumn of the war. The once mighty German nation teetered at the brink. Her cities lay in ruins, her industry had been shattered, her economy was on the verge of collapse, and worse, the Allied armies of the world were locking a death grip on the very borders of the Reich itself. No one with eyes to see or mind to think could doubt that utter defeat was not only certain, but imminent. And yet, the village of Nemersdorf slept. For 6 years now, the Third Reich had been mortally engaged in the most violent and cataclysmic war the world had ever known. Millions of Germans were already dead, millions more were crippled or maimed, and many others who had survived intact were staggering towards starvation. And yet, Nemersdorf slept. The children of the village lay snug, warm, and seemingly secure beside their mothers, as they always had, and as they imagined they always would. In the bedrooms below, grandfathers, now the only men remaining, coughed quietly in the night, then rose from time to time, as they always had, for a cup of water, a glass of schnapps, or perhaps a quiet moment's draw on the pipe. Just beyond, in the barns that adjoined most homes, milk cows rustled softly among the hay and fodder. In the dark village square, the old town clock patiently tolled the passing hours as it had night after night, year after year, century after century. Outwardly, at least, and despite a world engulfed in smoke and flame, nights in Nemersdorf passed peacefully, predictably, as they always had. But that was about to change. All was about to be violently swept away forever. The war, like a wall of angry red lava, was rushing down on the sleeping hamlet, and was only moments from arrival.
You know, Dave, the reason we had to play those two clips like that quick is because we Sam had to do it in order to get both of them in this one segment, because we're on the verge of having to go to our first break, and we'll be going there any second. But before we go,
it would have been okay to get the other one in the next segment. That would have been fine as well. So, but you know, we got them both in. That's fine, Eddie.
You know, I'm glad we could. Like I say, Sam is the wizard man. I just follow his point. He's the point man. But before we go to the break, give us an idea. I assume Paul English is there now, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you warm everything up, Eddie. Nice to be here.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm really delighted to have you two guys on the night. We've gone to a new clock recently, so we actually have more time. But I'm going to ask you a question where I'm probably going to run out. You probably won't have. There's the break. I'll have a question for you, Paul, as soon as we come back, and I'll go from you back to Dave. People, hold on. We'll be right back with the one and only Dave Gaharie and Paul English redoing the new audio edition of Hellstorm. So hold on to your seats.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, "If those people," referring to the dictatorial federal government, "if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home." As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church, a congregation of God's covenant people. Informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ had been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, people, thank you for holding on. In case you just now tuned in, bear with my voice. It's wearing down. I've been on the phone all day. But we have Dave Gaharie of Money Tree Press and Publishing, I call it. And they have a new edition of Mike, a.k.a. Tom Goodrich's book, Hellstorm. I've never known anybody that can read that book without having a severe emotional effect from it. We also have Mr. Paul English. He's calling in on from the UK. Paul is the one who narrates the audio version. And I don't know, Paul, or I would assume you're in the DVD too, right?
No, I'm not. Your assumption's misguided. I'm not. I mean, I think, you know, the history is that these were three separate sort of events in a way. I mean, obviously not, because Tom is the link point for everything. But I spoke to Tom quite separately about the audiobook. The video had come out through another route. And of course, what's exciting about now is that all of these different threads or these different iterations of the story have all now been gathered under Dave's control, as it were. And this is a good thing. And so, you know, I think it is probably quite rare that all of these different sort of aspects of a particular narrative have all come together in one place, but it's a very good thing. So we're all hoping that it's going to punch above its weight. You know, the sum of the parts is greater than the whole, blah, 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 blah. And it does seem to be going that way. So that's a good thing.
That is fabulous news. I tell you, I'm really excited about it. I guarantee, double damn to you, I'm going to get the audiobook and or the DVD. I guarantee you. But let me ask you a question. I know you narrated the book, Paul, and we've had you on the air before. You knocked it out of the park each time. We had you on once with our one of our other. Well, I'm like his co-host. I'm his right hand man. Gene Andrews. We had him on with you.
Yeah, a few months back, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, sir. It was. And I don't know, you know, our show is growing really like crazy. So we have a lot of listeners that weren't on then. And we won't neglect Dave too long, that's for sure. But if you will, give us a little bit about, if it's not too broad, if it's trying to ask, if I hope it's not trying to ask you to cover too much, give us a little bit of the background that led up to the war. Well, the reasons why did they declare on Germany, and what led up to that bombing of the Dresden? Get in your own words, the way you want to do it, because I know you're an expert on that history there.
Well, yeah, I mean that's a big question. Actually, it's enormous, isn't it? I don't know if I could condense that into 2 minutes. I mean, how fast are we supposed to hop through history? It's quick, but I mean, World War One and World War Two are effectively, in my view, one event with a big pause in the middle. Because it was always intended that that would be the case. And so Germany was earmarked for sort of removal out of the world stage even before the arrival of Adolf, I think, in many ways. But, of course, that crystallized it and brought it forward. The Weimar Republic and the Treaty of Versailles absolutely guaranteed that there would be more conflict to come. Lloyd George over here said as much after they walked out. And, of course, you only have to look at the nature or the profile of most of the attendees at the Treaty of Versailles. 92% of them were lawyers, mainly, I think, from your neck of the woods, and most of them not Americans, if you get my drift. So things were totally bent out of whack. They were totally bent out of whack. Germany was completely stitched up, which was intended, and that lay in a sort of fuse. You know, it was like on a timer. It was just going to be a matter of when. I think under Mr. Hitler, Germany really did everything they possibly could to avoid war or conflict on this big scale, because there was literally no benefit in it to them other than regathering back these lands that had been, you know, artificially and intentionally severed away from the main nation on purpose, of course, you know, like the Danzig Corridor and parts of Czechoslovakia and so on and so forth. But they created all the reasons to put the tension back in, and hey presto, you know, it worked. But other than that, there was no reason. I mean, you know, that nation had gone from nothing, less than nothing in the 20s, in a terrible state in the early 30s, like most of the world was after the crash of Wall Street, another organized event. And they recovered faster than anyone else, so that by about 37, 38, they were on per capita, I think, possibly the richest, or certainly amongst the happiest people on the face of the earth. And these were the people that apparently had lost World War One. So what was there? There was nothing for them to gain. And in fact, you know, although we've been told that they were evil and wanted to take over the world, a careful reviewing of that shows that that's nonsense, because there's literally no reason for them to do it, because most of it had already been taken over by Britain, France, Russia, and America by then. So, you know, much of the causative reasons that were given are a lie, basically. So, I'm only touching on a few sort of solid blocks of stuff. There's an awful lot more to it than that. There's the setup and the fix was in and all that kind of stuff. But where Tom's book comes in is he shows you how really this thing morphed into an intense evil against Germany. There's no two ways about it. I don't know whether it started off like that, but ultimately it was always going to end up this way. And as he points out, and is probably well known by many of your listeners, more Germans died after the war than during it. This is an unknown fact to the vast majority of people even today. And this book demonstrates quite clearly why that's the case, not only just cataloguing it, but also detailing it really from the personal anecdotes and testimonies of those people who are fully featured within Tom's outstanding narrative. And, you know, that's why it's such an important book.
Yes, you know, Paul, is the fact in your book, you know, that actually world Jewry, before the shooting ever started against the Second World War against Germany, world Jewry, the International Jewish Committee, whatever, they actually declared war on Germany. There was a, I don't have the paper with me, Gene Andrews covered this, I think, on a previous show, so I'm going from memory. Yeah. They actually declared war on Germany about 1933. They, you know, this the miracle, I call it a miracle. I wonder if it's probably in your book, talks about maybe describing it as the economic miracle recovery that you just talked about, that Germany was created after the First World War, between the First World War and the 1937, you said.
Yeah.
You know, now the reason they were able to, and I'm asking you, this may or may not be in your book, would the Hitler and the Germans create a better, a more honest system of finance? They didn't use fake money. They wouldn't actually based on gold and silver. Their monetary system was based on a labor, like a man, like a chemist working the chemistry, a chemical plant, you know, a road worker, an engineer, et cetera. And they pretty much did away with these Zionist Jewish bankers and kicked them the hell out of Germany. So is that part in your book, or am I wrong? Maybe I'm just
no,
imagining
Tom,
that.
Tom really doesn't cover that bit. Tom's Hellstorm is dealing with the final chapters of that. It is obviously really useful for readers, or those readers that are aware of what took place in the 20s and 30s will come to the book. I suppose with possibly a more fine tuned perspective on what they're about to read. But nothing really prepares you for this book, I don't think, because of the sheer horror that's in it. And you realize the reason why the impact is so strong is that it's not a grandstanding book. It is the tales of everyday people involved in military activities, in civilian activities, and the desperate situation that they found themselves in. But yes, I mean, you know, if you look at the causative factors behind that, there are many. But the economic success of Germany is not likely to go down too well with a bunch of international spivs, is it? And it didn't.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You're right about the thing in the newspaper. Samuel Untermeyer declared war on Germany in 1933, I think it was, literally. The minute he was in power, they were declaring war on him because they knew the measures that he was about to take, which invalidate the garbage systems that they've imposed on all the other Western Christian countries that are currently tanking, as you, unfortunately, and I as well in my country, well, no, we're living through it right now.
Absolutely. Hey, Dave, is there anything you'd like to, any comment you'd like to make in response to Paul?
No, Paul's always a tough act to follow, but
ain't it the truth?
There isn't. I would just
encourage
folks. Yes.
Before I forget, how much? What is the best way that they can get these all three, or either one, or all three? Give us her website and a price, et cetera, et cetera. Dave.
Yeah, sure. It's at moneytreepublishing.com, and I guess you might put the link on this show. I guess on the website, so folks could click that and. At moneytreepublishing.com, then you click on the shop button, and then you click on the Hellstorm category, and then you'll see it all there, where the book, there you go.
Hey, we will get Jacob, he's the guy that does that. I may even get him to contact you, because he's a lot more tech savvy than I am. The people will be right back. We ain't even got started yet with the new book of Hellstorm. Be right back.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, Pursuing Liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Here, just north of Sacramento, California, it's difficult to breathe through a thick cloud of brown smoke from hundreds of wildfires. They started from lightning storms, which happened earlier in the week. Nearly 12,000 firefighters statewide continue to battle the blazes, 22 of which are major. The flames have already burned an area three times the size of Los Angeles. At least six people have died. Governor Gavin Newsom says resources are stretched thin.
We've been on the phone with governors trying to reach out as far as the East Coast to see if we can get resources here into the state of California.
Paul Verkemen is in Napa Valley.
Here we've had 314,000 acres burned, some 560 structures completely destroyed. This is now the second largest wildfire in California history.
This is USA Radio News.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance. And MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month, but you might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's health care costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by August 31st, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have. And start saving. Here it is. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Bad news for the Gulf region. Two tropical weather systems are moving towards the Gulf Coast. USA's Kenneth Burns reports on how one Texas city is preparing.
Houston officials are planning ahead of Tropical Storm Laura and Depression 14, which could become Tropical Storm Marco by Sunday. They're urging residents to be prepared now. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner says first responders will be ready to perform water rescues, if any. He also says they've kept the COVID-19 pandemic in mind.
We still will be intending to take do the COVID checks and to spread people out. And so, again, this is one of the times where you may have to be encouraged to shelter in place or shelter with family or friends or neighbors if it is needed.
It has been more than 60 years since two tropical strength storms have been in the Gulf at the same time. For USA Radio News, I'm Kenneth Burns.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Well, people, we're right back. I hope y'all enjoyed the music. I handpicked that little piece right there. We have some great music on here from the German era of the 1930s. People, in case you've tuned in late, we have Dave Gaharry of Money Tree Press on, and we also have Paul English. Now, Dave has, in case you're tuned in late, Dave Gaharry of Money Tree Press, he has redone the great book, It's worse than the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but the trouble is, the thing is, it's true. It's really true about what happened to the German people before and after World War II. And as Paul mentioned, let this sink in. He said something, I hope you people caught it. More Germans were massacred and murdered and butchered and tortured dead after the war ceased, after the shooting ceased in Germany. I think it was May the 6th of 1945. Between 1945 and 1947, more Germans were tortured and starved to death than died in combat. You know, the stinking Zhao armies of the world, they couldn't defeat them in combat on the field, you know, as easily. So what they could do is, once they had them tied, so to speak, rhetorically, hands tied behind their back, hog tied, then they could come in and throw gasoline on them and burn them, and they could rape the women, and they could hang little boys by their thumbnails, and they could, you know, put fish hooks in their eyes. All this crap happened, people. Do not think it did not happen. It happened, and it became to you thanks to this, thanks to these sons, these people of their father, the devil, that we talked about. If you go to Romans 8:44, Jesus Christ Almighty, and I don't want to get too long in the tooth, but our Southern Baptist friends will tell you, you know, we have to worship these Jews. They're the chosen people. You know, that's what the Southern Baptists say. But if you go look and see what Jesus said about them, that they were their sons of the devil. And that's the people who did this, inflicted this hell on the people in Germany before and after the war. That's the people who controlled the money system, that are the entire Western world money system. Now, back to you. I don't want to get too worked up there, Dave. I'm coming back to you. Tell them again one more time, because their memory is probably like mine, short. How is the best way our audience can come and get these products, these fine products?
Sure, Eddie. So it's Money Tree Publishing is the name of the company. And it's moneytreepublishing.com. And they just go to that website, click on the shop button, and then the first item on the left is the Hellstorm package, and then click more, and you'll see what's offered. The book itself is $25. An autographed version of the book that Tom will autograph is $35. An inscribed version of the book is $55. So that means that if somebody wants to have Tom write whatever it is they want him to write in the book, he will do that. The DVD is $20, the 90-minute movie, and the audiobook, the 14-hour audiobook, is $30. And, of course, that's the only item that doesn't have any shipping, of course, because it's delivered electronically. So people have already got the audiobook all over the world, and they get it delivered instantly, and all they have to do is just download it. Sometimes, you know, computers being what they are, and technology and connections, sometimes it can be problematic, but most of the time it runs smoothly. So that's what's offered, and you would select what you want. If you get, for example, the book itself and the audiobook, if you get them together, the combination of those, there's $5 off of that to encourage folks to do it. And if you get the book and the DVD, there's also $5 off. And if you get the entire package itself, you also get another $5 off. So if you get the book, the DVD, and the audiobook, you get $10 off. So, and of course, you would have to pay the shipping to wherever that goes. But that's how they do it, moneytreepublishing.com.
I'll tell you what, it's an idea. I think what would be great if people, you say the DVD is 90 minutes. If we could get that DVD and rent a space and show that to a group, and raise money, people could give it to their favorite charity. You know, they could send it to some white Christian rights organization. But that's the great, great work you've done, Dave. I really admire you and respect you for that. Like I told the audience before, I remember you and I, we did a special. I think we did two shows, you know, on the Erasing the Liberty. Boy, that was a huge hit, man. That was a very emotional show. But I tell you what, if you think the Erasing the Liberty was emotional, this right here, what happened to the Germans in 1944, 1945, that through 1947 was even worse, if it's possible. I mean, these people that are our enemies, they know no bounds. Go ahead, Dave.
No, absolutely. You know, to put it in perspective, the Liberty Massacre, which lasted about an hour, and there's a lot of folks who want to believe it lasted 2 hours. It didn't. It lasted about an hour. But that hour, of course, it wasn't anywhere near what had happened to these poor people that you really want to cry for when you see what they did and how they did it. For years and years and years and years. And yes, the Liberty guys had to put up with this traumatic
event, and 34 of them were murdered, 25 from the torpedo strike, and 9 from the air attacks. But when you put that into perspective of what these poor Germans went through, who had nothing to do with the war, and even the ones who did, what these Allied savages did to them at the behest of course, their Jewish masters, it's not comparable in any way.
You know, and I'd like to tell people, if you think what they did, what these Jewish people did under our wonderful allies, Israel, when they attacked the Liberty, they knew full well that this was an American ship. We're supposed to be there. We're their greatest allies. Well, you know, without the United States, there would be no Israel. We're supposed to be their greatest friends. If they would attack a ship in international waters of their allies and machine gun a ship, machine gun the lifeboats, torpedoes into the ship. In fact, one of the sailors I've heard said that God helped that ship up. If they would drop napalm on sailors and Marines aboard a ship, knowing that they were supposed to be allies. So people sat there, let that digest. Don't tell me they wouldn't do it to the Germans who were supposed to be our enemies, the enemies that were fighting in the war. Don't tell me they wouldn't do that to those people. And just like Dave said, well, I'll tell you what, let's go back to Paul, the expert. Paul, tell us about some of the things that happened in Hellstorm. Let's get fast forward to Dresden, when the first night of the bombing in Dresden.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you know, you know. But if you don't know, it's all a bit of a shock, really. Took place in... it's right towards the tail end of the war, you see. This is also part of it. Most of these acts, particularly in 1945, were completely and utterly unnecessary. It was an inevitability. By this time that Germany had lost the war, they'd actually already known it about 18 months prior, really. As soon as the tide turned in the east, that was really it, and they kind of knew it. And fought a magnificent rearguard action to try and save as many people as they could. Dresden was initiated. They love their little dates and all this kind of stuff. So it took place on Valentine's Day, was the first wave of that, February the 14th, is that right? I can't remember when Valentine's Day is. Shows you how long anybody's ever sent me a Valentine's card. Thankfully, I don't get in for all that sentimental nonsense. No, not really. It's a sweet part of life, isn't it? But yes, there was a Dresden on Valentine's Day, and the city was swollen to maybe 4 or 5 times its normal population because the onslaught from the east had driven huge, vast numbers of refugees and military on the retreat. And Dresden was a bit of a sort of safe haven, or was viewed to be that. It had no military or strategic purpose whatsoever. It was a very beautiful town, as anybody who's seen any of the photographs pre-bombing or pre-destruction could tell you. Architecturally, it was quite a magnificent city. So there was a lot of residual art and sensitivity in that place. And
Paul, we have to go to a quick break.
On Valentine's Day, they smashed it to bits. Yeah.
Paul, we'll come right back. We'll finish that segment up as soon as we come back. This is our last break. Get ready to go to our last segment, people. Hang on.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Well, people, we're right back, and we're getting ready to go back to Paul English, who's calling in from the UK. Just in case you just got tuned in, Paul is the voice for the audio version of the new audio book, Hellstorm. So if you're like me, if you suffer with time of reading and stuff like that, and I kind of like to listen to stuff anyway, so you can get this book, and he is the voice. Of the audiobook. Paul, we left you at the break. I'm going to go right back to you and let you finish up what you were talking about.
Yeah, we were just on Dresden, weren't we?
Yes, sir.
Which, of course, you could do multiple shows just on Dresden alone, I guess. So it's always a bit awkward, I think, to try and sort of boil it down to a snippet, because it kind of sort of seems to me, as I'm talking about it, I'm sort of trivializing about it because of covering it in such a short way. But the intention was to just ruin the city by killing as many people as possible. And the account in Hellstorm is in considerable detail of that hell. And the airmen that were doing it, certainly some of the crews, they knew it was not right. There are all sorts of things that are possibly not even covered in the book, I think. But I've even got, you know, anecdotes from RAF briefings where the pilots were disgusted by this at a certain point. I'm not saying all of them were. They lost 50,000 airmen. We did anyway. I don't know how many you guys lost, but, you know, so I'm not even blaming the airmen. But there was another force at play. Those airmen would have been shot or court-martialed or whatever if they'd refused the order to keep on doing it. But one of the comments from the back of one of the briefing rooms was, because this thing went on for days, and it wasn't just Dresden, it was Hamburg and elsewhere, it was nonstop. He said, oh, it's women and children first again, then, is it? Cynically saying that's what we're off to do. We're just going to go and blow up women and children again, are we? This is what we're used for. So there was a deep cynicism amongst many of the RAF crew. It was just the whole thing's out of order. And you realize, of course, that what you're looking at is the actual genocidal intent. It's not directed at those people that were in the work camps, even though that's the narrative that everybody thinks. It's the complete reverse of that. The intent of the war, and Churchill, that fine, magnificent, bloated pig of a man, said as much in the late 30s, where he said, you know, this is not a war against National Socialism or Hitler. This is a war against the strength of the German people to crush it completely. That's what they were up to. Why? You know, what are the Germans? It's ridiculous. And of course, with regards to my country, prior to 1914, we'd never had a war with them ever. Think about that. Ever. Most of the people in England are Saxons. We come from Germany, you know. So we're blended in. And there's a huge German-derived population, obviously, in America as well. So the whole thing is that invidious force is in the middle, causing the ruckus. And what a hellish thing it caused. So Dresden, of course, is noted for this. And it's a horrific thing. There's still a man alive here today, who was a British infantryman. I've forgotten his name now. It might come back to me, but he's still alive. He'll be about 97 or 98. He's got all his marbles, and he was in it when it happened. And they had him on BBC TV. This doesn't mean that I like the BBC, so don't tell you that way. It just happened to be on. Greg, his name's Greg. That's his surname. I've forgotten the first name. And he was in Dresden when it happened, and he was describing it. And they were asking these effectively rather banal questions. He said, I don't know what you want me to say. What do you want me to say to you? He said that after that, he didn't laugh for 30 years. That was 1945. He said, I didn't laugh for the next 30 years after what he'd witnessed. And he was a very tough man. He'd signed up into the army in 1937 and had been, he said, with the 200 guys that I signed up with in 1937. So that was before the outbreak of hostilities. There's only five of us actually made it through to the end of the war. So he'd lost everyone and had been in some extremely dirty fighting situations. This, he said, it's like water off a duck's back to me. He said it was war. That's what we were doing. But this, he said, this was just the destruction of women and children, he said. And it just sickened me. He said, and he was the guy, he said, I'm not blaming the aircrew. But he said, those in charge, Eden, Churchill, these people, you could see this look of disgust on his face. Absolutely. So, you know, that's really what we're dealing with. And what Tom does in the book is he provides the other side of history, the account that is not well known, that has to be known, if you want to have any chance at all at getting to the truth of all of this stuff. So, yeah.
You know, Paul, is there any, I don't know if you know or not, is there any coverage of the occult, anti-Christian religion, especially the occult, on the Allies' side in their vitriol, their hatred of the Germans, who I would come out and say the German nation at that time was, the best of my knowledge, was just strongly religious. They had a strong Catholic population. Was there any, this may be a rhetorical question, is there any of the religious occult aspect covered in the book, to your knowledge? Well, you would know because you did the audio. Is there
no,
any of that
I
in there?
So.
In the
I
book?
Don't think Tom really goes in. Well, you mean the occult aspects that are assigned to National Socialists and those people, or the Allies side?
On the Allies side, because I've been told that not only, you know, this may be a rabbit trail, a bridge too far, that the likes of Eleanor Roosevelt, the right likes of Churchill, maybe on thin ice, that they were deeply into the occult, you know.
Well, Churchill, Churchill was a druid, but I, you know, then you go, oh, are all druids bad? No, not necessarily is the case. It's a bit like saying, well, all Freemasonry is terrible. Well, there was a point when it wasn't. There was a point when Freemasonry was not infiltrated and was not bent out of whack and was not this insidious thing that it's turned into. Certainly before, you know, certainly in France where it was hellish because of its use as an agent to bring about the French Revolution. But there was a time even in France before that when Freemasonry was okay. So it's difficult to sort of, you know, I don't want to tar all these things with one brush personally because they're pretty detailed sort of things to go into. But the book doesn't cover anything like that. But I know Churchill was into things like that. There's lots of photographs of him dressed up as a druid. But this guy, you know, what am I to say? Recently, I don't know if you saw it over here, we have this pathetic imitation Black Lives Matter movement in the UK. It's just, it's beyond ridiculous. It's absolutely beyond ridiculous. People griping about things, they came here voluntarily. I mean, it's just mad, you know. But they were trying to pull down Churchill's statue. And I found myself completely torn into 5,000 different directions. A, because his statue does need to be pulled down. But B, if anybody's going to pull it down, it'll be me. And for the right reasons. And they were pulling it down for all the wrong ones. So it was a very bizarre sort of occurrence. But even now, he's still lauded as somebody. You still see it now in lots of errorful communications. He saved us from Germany. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? You know, Germany had absolutely no intention of even fighting us. This is the whole thing. He was instrumental in bringing all this mess about. So there's still masses of documentaries to be made. I've just come up here with this project with Dave and pulling it all together. And it came up the other day when we were talking, is that the reminder process never ends. You know, we were with you. I was with you with Tom a year and a bit ago, and a year goes by, and you realize that lots of new people are coming into a marketplace, for example, to read stuff like this, and they don't even know that these things exist. So there's still a massive amount of awareness creation to be done. huge, you know. And of course, we know we're outgunned from the other side, but we plow on, don't we? And efforts like you're doing here and everything that everybody's doing all adds to it. And it's all, you know, it's good. Everybody needs to be doing something in this direction, I feel.
And, you know, Paul, before I go back to Dave right quickly, I feel like I've left him out of the limb, but I guess I should have phrased that question.
No, please, not at all. Not at all.
Oh, I guess I should have phrased that question. Was Germany bombed, were they hated desperately from as soon as Hitler came into power? I guess for any of these number of reasons, which ones they hated the most? Because of their economic miracle, they kicked out the Jewish international Zionist bankers. They kicked them out and got their own. I got those leeches out of their blood. Or were they hated for that? Or they hated more because they were a Christian nation? Or were they hated more because they were, they were kicking the hell out of the United States and Britain and in Canada? They were a jewel in the crown of this recovery from the Depression that you mentioned earlier, that it was totally created. Back to you, Dave. I'm sorry I've neglected you so long.
Oh, please, Eddie, you haven't neglected me. And, you know, we each have our, you know, part to do here. And these questions, I think, are directed better to Paul. And I love listening to you guys anyway. So, Paul, I don't mean to put the pressure on you, but if you could answer that.
No, great. Not at all. You're right, Eddie. There's a lot of factors at play. I couldn't off the top of my head tell you which is the most important one, but it's because there are ambivalent comments about Hitler's commitment to Christianity and this, that, and the other. I don't really want to go into those because I think it's a very rich field to discuss, and I think the answers are not necessarily too surprising. I think people involved in positions of power have to make decisions at the time which they think are the best. And maybe in retrospect, everybody gets highly judgmental, but we weren't there at the time. You know, the economic miracle, I've heard people say, oh, he took money from Wall Street, you know, so he was in on it. I'm going, so what? You know, if I was in charge of Germany, I'd take money from anywhere. I'm raising my people. I can care less about that.
You got that
I'm going
right.
to crack on with it. We'll deal with that problem later. I'm not bothered about what you think about me. I'm bothered about what I think and what I'm supposed to do for my people. So you just have to look at the proof in the pudding. They came out of the toilet and were on top of the world in 6 years flat. I mean, so did that sort of, you know, peeve people? Yeah, it did. The British particularly, right? And when I say the British, I don't mean people like me. I mean the sort of inbred scoundrels that have been in charge of this dunghole for a couple of hundred years, right? And there is a massive class divide in Britain. There always has been, right? And and it doesn't mean that all people from the upper classes are bad. There have been good ones. But overall, the thing stinks. It stinks. They have a foul attitude. And you only have to look at British history to see how we were treated. Everybody goes, oh, the British took over the world. Really? I don't think so. I don't think my forefathers did. They were probably down some pit or getting shot on some field 300 years ago or something like that. It's all garbage history. You know, it's just dressed up nonsense. Nowhere more so than in World War II. So I think they were resented for all sorts of reasons. But basically, when they got to grips, when they looked pragmatically at what it took to run a nation, you find that at the core of it is race, right? Race is absolutely key. You have to have
blood,
uniform
soul.
Ethnicity. It's key. That's why,
yes.
In spite of all the hellish things that Tom details in the book, they recovered and worked their way out of it. And had they been a so-called multiracial, multicultural society, of which there is no such thing, by the way. This is just gibberish words again. They wouldn't have done it. It's because they all looked at one another and went, we're all brothers and sisters, and we've got nothing left. Let's pull ourselves out of the toilet. And they did magnificently.
Paul, speaking of magnificently, you've done a magnificent job, my man. I would sure like to get you back again soon, especially... I forgot. Well, Dresden, we just talked about maybe we can get you back during Dresden. We celebrate Dresden week here. I believe it's in February, and what you just mentioned. But thank you so much, Paul. Thank you so much, Dave. God bless you guys. And I'm so honored to have you guys on our show, a little fledgling show. We're not even 2 years old yet. We'll be 2 years with September. We're like two more months to be 2 years old. But thank you so much. People, I hope you enjoyed the caliber of guests that you've had on tonight. And please order these books. Please support your fellow white people, your fellow Christians. Well, anyway, people, tune in same time next week, the 29th. We'll be right here. God willing. Good night, everybody. Good night.